This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. With another 60 minutes of radio drama, this is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday. We'll begin this week with Theater 5. We'll hear Death of an Old Flame from May 20th, 1965. After that, it's The Whistler and Finale from August 20th, 1950.
Theater 5 presents Mr. Sammy Davis Jr. in Death of an Old Flame.
The name's Warren, Ronnie Warren. I play piano. I play in what they call piano bar. That's where they tear the top off a baby grand and build the counter all the way around for the jerks to put their drinks on. Not joints, but with a rug on the floor and a man at the door and a cigarette girl who in her heart believes she wouldn't be here except for the money. I must have played back and forth across the country a dozen times. Never the top spot. But never the dime. I work. Keep the piano, too.
Hey, Ronnie, a lady wants to hear a song.
That's Leo. He owns this place. Not a bad guy as owners go, but still an owner. I look up at the chick at the far end of the piano. She smiles. I smile. Slow and shy like a boy fresh out of college. She eats it up.
She says she'd like to hear Stardust.
Yeah, that figures.
You see, she even wrote it out for you.
Tell her that looks more like a telephone number to me, will you?
I guess she wants you to call her.
Tell her I never learned how to use a phone.
Ronnie, she's a customer.
Yeah, I know. So I smile at her again. Like we're both college sophomores. And this is our first date. But she's a chick like any other. Poured into an expensive dress for a night on the town. A local princess who thinks she deserves better than she's got. Better than the secondhand car in a garage and television every night. Better than the guy she came in with. Better than anything she'll ever have. For a moment, the piano player in the downtown club is better. And that piano player is me. And she'll settle for that. All right, tell her I get off at 2, will you?
Okay. I wonder how she'll ditch the guy.
She'll find a way if she has to. Dames are like that.
Hey, what about the guys, Ronnie? How come you never got your face caved in?
Not a chance. Those red-blooded all-American boys always figure a piano player for a patsy. That is, until it's too late. After banging these beat-up keyboards for 15 years, Leo, if I get a grip on a guy, I can bust his arm.
So why didn't you tell me before I lost a day's profits Indian wrestling with you?
It's a trade secret for piano players on the make. But the chicks, well, they've got their secrets, too. If they get close enough, they can bust more than your arm. One thing I've learned is never to trust a chick. Never even give an even break. Now that when they're smiling at her date, see? She'll be here later, and I'll take her home. Something better doesn't show up.
Tell me, Ronnie, how do you do it?
My boyish charm. My boyish charm. That's a joke around the saloons. I'm 35 and I still look like I should be in college. Some guys say that's why I score so well. Really, it's the way I play the piano. I play like I'm in another world. When I look up, I always smile. Like I'm pleasantly surprised that such beautiful music could find itself in the presence of such excellent company. I smile this way whether I'm looking at a wall, the bartender, a crying drunk, or the chick I'm working on at the moment. And out of all of them, only the chicks are vain enough to take it personally.
Excuse me, please, but would you mind playing? I get along without you very well.
I don't play that number. I had seen her come in. I swung around to see what the voice told me I would find. Her face was right at my shoulder. The eyes were still incredibly blue. So deep and blue that you had to look twice to believe what you saw.
Hello, Ronnie.
She smiled. And somebody took a clean blade and dumped my insides on the floor. There was nothing left inside but an aching hurt. I turned back to the piano because I was afraid she would see me trembling. Hello, Anna.
Mind if I sit down?
Yeah, go ahead. Long time no see.
5.5 years, to be exact.
I didn't keep track.
Will you buy me a drink?
I don't buy drinks. Customers. She sat like she was suddenly very tired and toyed with her gloves for a moment, the way she used to. Her mouth was the way I remembered it. And her hair was still soft and gold. Then I noticed there was a hole in one of the fingers of her glove, and her dress was last year's style. I signaled the bartender to bring her a drink.
Thanks. I read in the papers you were playing here. I kept track of you from the papers. Where you'd been when you hit town.
I would have kept in touch, but when I got back that night, all I could find was an empty hotel room. You know, you didn't leave much of a forwarding address.
I know that was wrong. I've been sorry a million times, honey. Did you, I never heard. Did you marry again?
When the man said, until death do us part, I figured he meant it. He's right. Well, the marriage bit comes in handy. You know, when a chick screams, hey, marry me. I just say, I'd love to, baby, but I'm already married. Saves me a lot of scenes. How about you?
No.
Frankie leave you for somebody else?
No, he won't marry me.
You're still with him?
Yes. No. Ronnie, play our song.
You heard me. I don't play that song.
Please, Ronnie. I haven't heard it in a long time.
It was something I forgot how it goes.
I don't believe that. Please, Ronnie, once more, for old time's sake.
Come on, Anna, what's the pitch? You just don't run out and then pop up 6 years later for nothing. What do you want?
I need help.
What kind of help?
Frank's flat. We don't have a cent.
Okay, what do you want me to do? Lend him money?
No.
What?
He knows where he can make a score. He figures if he can make one good score, he can leave town and start all over again.
What score?
Frank knows that there's a 500,000 in surge just waiting to be picked up. It's an inside job. He'd handle it all himself, except... you'd be the first one they'd suspect. All you'd have to do is help me load the truck and drive.
Oh, wait a minute, wait, wait. Well, let me get this straight. You want me to help you make a heist so that you can have enough money to take your boyfriend, Frankie, someplace else where you and he can live happily ever after?
Well, you'd get half.
The last thing I want, Anna, is your money.
Oh, Ronnie, please. I know I shouldn't ask you, but there's no place I can turn. There's no one else I can trust.
Sat there, jamming the frailness of one white knuckle against the softness of one red lip. And I wanted to take her in my arms and tell her everything will be all right. And when she said...
please, Ronnie, just this once.
I heard myself say... okay, Anna, just this once. Yeah, like for old time's sake. Just once, for old time's sake. I must have been crazy. Sure, I was crazy. Yeah, about her. Why else would a bright guy who had never done a crooked thing in his life find himself on a robbery? Well, when I got to work that night, I talked to Leo. Leo, I have some business from 10 till 12 tonight. I'd like out.
It's important?
It's so important, if anybody should ask, I'd be obliged if you say I spent the time sleeping off a hangover in your office couch.
Okay. But, let me give you a little piece of advice.
Mike?
Like, I don't want to know, but if this important business has anything to do with the broad I saw you talking to last night, I'd watch my step.
What?
That's Frankie Amato's girl.
Yeah, like I know.
No, you don't know. He's a killer.
You made it?
Yeah, Leo will cover for me. Okay, where to?
Just drive straight down the street.
Mm-hmm. I drove as she directed. So we pulled up behind a row of stores.
I'll open the garage door. Back the truck inside.
She had a key to the place, and I did it, I was told. Okay, now what?
Help me get the furs off these racks.
Don't you want to hang them up or something?
No, there isn't time. Just throw them in the truck.
Look, I don't know anything about furs, but this doesn't look like a $500,000 worth of fur to me.
Quiet and hurry.
Okay, that's it. Let's go. Hey, what are you doing?
Help me spread this stuff around, will you?
What for?
It's cleaning fluid. We're going to set fire to the place.
What for?
To burn the evidence. Frank says we have to destroy all the evidence.
Think about a fire.
I was afraid you wouldn't go through with it if I did.
Of course I wouldn't. Look, taking these furs are one thing, but arson is something else. Somebody could get killed.
But we have to. Frank is playing cards with the guy that owns this place. We have to fix his alibi with the time of the fire.
All that matters is Frank and his alibi, isn't it?
No.
What happens if a cop walks through that door right now, Anna? What kind of alibi does Frank have ready for you?
That doesn't matter.
No, all that matters is Frank is safe. That he's got somebody to lie for him, to steal for him. And what for, Anna? What does he do for you?
Oh, please, Ronnie.
Answer me, Anna. What does he do for you?
Nothing.
Then why do you stay with
him? I don't know.
Tell me one thing, Anna. Do you love him?
No.
I love you, Anna.
Oh, Ronnie, please.
I never stopped. Every town I hit, every place I went, I walked the places we used to walk. I sang the songs we used to sing.
Ronnie, please, we've got to get out of here.
We could come out of here right now and never come back. We could start all over again from the beginning. Make it like it was before, only better. 100 times
Ronnie,
better.
Ronnie, please.
Come on, Anna, what do you say? You could do it. You'd give it a try.
Ronnie, we can't talk about it now. There isn't time. We've got to finish this and get out of here.
The answer's no.
Ronnie, please. Help me with this one thing, and I'll never ask again as long as I live. Ronnie, please. Please.
All right, I'll do it. On one condition.
What's that?
And after it's over, you come away with me and never see Frank again. Well?
Okay, Ronnie, whatever you say. Only let's get it over with.
All right, give me that can.
Flash it down here. And into the office. Frank wants the whole place to burn.
Okay, but the fumes are so strong you can hardly breathe.
Yeah. Throw it over everything. The desk, the walls, the filing cabinet, everything.
Hey, wait a minute. This is Frank's office, isn't it?
No.
No? And why is this letter addressed to Frank Amato? Look, this is Frank's office. He wants this place to burn for a reason. Now, what is this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Level with me, Anna. What's going on?
Stay away from me, Ronnie.
You haven't leveled with me since the day we
don't
met.
Don't touch me.
You hurt the lady. Piano player. Keep your hands off her.
Yeah, I heard her.
They tell me you're very nice about answering requests by pretty dames, but just in case you feel like improvising, this gun I got is pretty good at calling the tune.
Yeah, Daddy, that breaks the whole medley.
Oh, play it too cool, piano player. You know how big a hole a .45 makes?
No, but if you hum a few bars, maybe I can fake it.
Keep your hands over your head.
Anna, you didn't tell me we had company. Now, offhand, I'd say you're Frank.
You are bright, college boy. Real bright.
Well, if this is a shakedown, I'm afraid you got the wrong party. I'm broke.
This ain't penny ante stuff. This is big money.
I don't get it.
You ever heard of insurance, college boy?
No, I don't carry it.
Yeah? Well, I do. I insured myself. Alive, I ain't worth a dime. Dead, I'm worth $50,000. Now, that's a fair piece of change. And Anna here's my only beneficiary.
I still don't know how this figures. I mean, unless you want me to help you commit suicide.
Oh, suicides don't collect. Besides, I wouldn't die for any dame. That's strictly for suckers like you.
I still don't read you.
Nobody's going to commit suicide. I'm going to be murdered.
Like I say, the melody's familiar, but so far the lyrics don't rhyme.
And I thought you was bright, college boy. I told the boss I was working late at the shop tonight. The police will think I left the door unlocked. Somebody found it open, tied me to my chair, took all the furs and burned the place to destroy me and the evidence. Now, while the police are sifting through your remains, I will be in Mexico, where Anna will join me after she's had sufficient time to recover from her grief and collect the insurance money.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's only one thing wrong with that song, Frank. Nobody would confuse me with you.
Have you ever tried to identify a man after he's been soaked with cleaning fluid and with a match? Mm-hmm. Now, you always wanted to take my place, college boy. Now you got it. Sit down in my chair.
Okay, Frank, you got the argument.
Throw me the rope, Anna. Take this gun. If he even looks like he's going to move, blast him.
Yes, Anna, blast him. For old time's sake.
Ronnie.
Shut up. Now, college boy, sit down. Sit. Shut up. Put your hands out in front of you.
Okay, Frank. But what's the hand? Like they're delicate. I make my living with them.
You won't have to worry about that anymore. Just give me the hand.
Sure.
Like this! All right, now on your knees, Frankie. Facing Anna.
Shoot, Anna! Shoot!
No, Anna. I can break his neck. Believe me.
Say, please, Anna, shoot!
I can't!
Kill him, Anna! Kill him!
I can't! I hit you!
All right, Anna. You just put that gun down, see? And back into the hall.
Oh.
Do what I say, Anna! I can kill him with my hands if I want to. You know something? I'm starting to worry.
No, Anna, no!
Let's put up his arm a little bit. A little bit, just a fin.
Anna, don't like he says. Don't like he says.
Now, that's better. You just put that gun on the table and back out into the hall. Frankie will excuse us. I'm going to put him away for a minute. We have something to talk about, you and me, privately.
What did you do to him?
Just a chop on the neck. Enough to put him out for a while.
You killed him.
No, but maybe I wish I had. Now, come on.
No, I'm not going with you.
Come on, hurry.
No.
You're coming with me, whether you like it or not. Now, come on.
Oh, my arm.
I'm getting out of here.
Frank is hurt. He needs me.
Frank's sick, and I need you.
Go, let go of me.
Come on, through this door. It's bolted. We gotta get out of here.
Frank's coming and he's got the gun.
We gotta get out. He'll blow that place up if he fires that gun with these gas fumes.
Come back here!
Frank!
Through this door!
Come back here, Dallas boy!
Frank!
Come on, let's get out of here!
We can't leave him. He'll burn alive.
Too late. We can't help him now.
Oh, Ronnie, let me go to him.
Anna, you can't go in there!
Frank! I'm coming, Frank!
Anna!
Frank!
Anna!
Frank!
Come back, Anna! Come back!
Ronnie, I see here in the paper where my old friend Frank Amato met with a fatal accident. He pined to death in a fur storage place.
Was that so?
Yeah, it happened last night, but I guess you wouldn't know anything about it, would you?
No, I guess I wouldn't.
I didn't think so. The way the cops figured it, he was trying to rob the place where he worked and then burn the store to cover his tracks, and somehow he touched it off ahead of time. Burned him and the girl that was with him.
There was a girl.
Yeah. It could have been the one that was in here last night. Hard to tell from what was left.
It's too bad.
Yeah, that's the way I thought you'd feel. Hey, don't look now, but I think you got a customer coming your way. I think I'll check the bar.
Thanks, Leo. I knew what was coming. Not even looking, I knew.
You know Stardust?
I had to struggle to keep him choking. Do I know Stardust? Now I looked up slow and shy and smiled like a college kid on his first day. My Stardust?
That's a beautiful song about a beautiful girl.
I was hoping you'd ask.
Thank you.
Hey, the pleasure's mine.
I've been listening to you. You play very well.
Thank you. It's been a long time since anyone said that. You know, most people just drink and pretend to listen. But not you. You're different. Kind of special.
Mm-hmm.
And for a special girl, I want to play a special number. Not just something ordinary like Stardust.
Oh, that's nice. What's it called?
Let's just call it our song, huh?
Thank you.
Theater 5 has presented Death of an Old Flame, starring Mr. Sammy Davis, Jr., written by George Bamber, directed by Warren Somerville. Featured in the cast, Joan Lovejoy, Bernard Grant, Ralph Bell, and Evelyn Juster. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
And now stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's Strange Story, finale.
The rehearsal of Ned Wilson's new Broadway musical had been in progress for several hours. On stage, the spotlight held the dancing figure of Christine Courtney, star of the show. Out front, the director, writers, and backers of the production watched intently, executed each intricate step with the rhythmic ease which had made her famous. Christine was well aware of the admiration she attracted. But at that moment, her efforts were devoted toward pleasing just one man. Her fiancé, Ned Wilson, producer of the show. And she glanced often into the wings where he stood watching her, smiling his approval.
Okay, chorus, let's take the tag break. Here we go.
As the chorus swung into the routine, Christine walked quickly off stage to Ned Wilson.
Oh, you're terrific, darling. Sensational. You know, if he was the star, the show just can't miss.
Oh, that's a very convincing line you have, Mr. Wilson. But go on. I love it when you tell me how wonderful I am.
It's not a line, and you know it. Oh, you're wonderful, Chris. You know, I just can't believe that you'll soon be Mrs. Ned Wilson.
Oh, Ned, I've waited for you so long. All my life.
Miss Courtney, may I speak to you for a moment, please?
Oh, Martin, of course. Here, I want you to meet Ned Wilson, our producer.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Wilson?
Ned, this is Martin Duncan.
Hello, Martin.
I spoke to you about him several days ago.
Oh, yes, the young playwright. Well, Chris tells me you've written a show I might be interested in, Martin.
Well, she said you'd read it, Mr. Wilson. Tell me if you think it has possibilities.
Sure, sure, I'd be glad to.
Look, while you two talk business, do you mind if I run along to my dressing room and change to street clothes?
Oh, no, go ahead, darling, go ahead.
And Martin, good luck with your play.
Well, thanks, Miss Courtney. Nice of you to help me out.
Forget it, Martin. I remember when I was trying to get a break.
Yes, you know how hard it is to get a foothold in show business, don't you, Christine? Your struggle to the top has been long and difficult, and you're proud of your accomplishment. For in achieving your goal, you've risen above the mistake you made long ago. For years, you've lived in constant fear that the past would catch up with you, ruin everything you've worked so hard to build up. And for almost a year, you've been Broadway's leading musical comedy star. And no part of the past has asserted itself. You make your way to your dressing room, humming happily to yourself. The past quite forgotten.
Hello, Miss Courtney.
Oh, hello.
I'm afraid the doorman doesn't keep a very close watch on the stage entrance.
No, he doesn't seem to. Look, if you want an autograph or something,
oh, believe me, Miss Courtney, I'm not a fan of yours. Not yet, anyway.
Well, then,
my name's Doris Richley. Mean anything to you?
Nothing.
It should. Maybe this will help. My hometown is Redwood, Missouri, and in case you've forgotten that, too, I'll just remind you, it's also your hometown.
Really? I don't know what you have in mind, but
8 years ago, a man and a young woman robbed the Redwood City Hotel of several thousand dollars. When the clerk tried to phone the police, he got himself killed.
Well?
Oh, you were just a girl then, in your teens. I was the only person who saw the two of you make your getaway. I don't know who he was, but I was able to identify you all right. And no one ever found you, till now.
This is the craziest thing I ever heard of.
Oh, you've changed your name, the color of your hair, but you're still little Maxine Wood of Redwood, Missouri, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I bet I'm the only one in Redwood who ever sees the theatrical section of the New York papers. Your picture's in it quite a bit, isn't it? Maxine.
Look, I'm not Maxine anybody, and I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you're not much of an actress, Maxine. Take a tip and stick with dancing. And, let's quit this hedging around. A quick check of your fingerprints would prove you're Maxine Wood. Want to go have him checked?
Get out of here.
You know, I can't decide whether I'll go to the police first or the newspapers. What would you do?
What is it you want?
Very little, Miss Courtney. You see, I came to New York to get into show business. I, thought you might like to help me.
Oh, why, of course. Oh, I can probably get you some kind of a part, and then, if you have ability...
I want your part.
You want my part?
Yes, made for me.
Well, do you know what you're saying? Why, I've signed contracts. I couldn't break them if I wanted to. And the producers want a name for a show like this. I couldn't even
easy.
Begin.
Easy, take it easy. I don't want to be unreasonable. I'll just bet you could use an understudy.
Oh, so that's it. You become my understudy, and after the show opens, I sprain an ankle or something, you take over.
You ought to know. You got your start as an understudy.
That's right, I did. Look, I'm just curious, you understand, but what makes you think you're good enough for the part?
Oh, I'm good enough. I know I am. As Shakespeare might phrase it, I've got it in here.
You know, you'd have to audition. I had to when I became an understudy. Oh, I just couldn't announce that you're going to understudy me. But well, Ned Wilson is not easy to please.
Neither am I, Miss Courtney. So, if I were you, I'd arrange an audition for me with Mr. Wilson. It just might be the smartest thing you ever did.
If someone asked you if you own a chemical factory, you'd probably answer no. Yet the engine of your car is actually a miniature chemical factory capable of generating enough heat to turn motor oil into synthetic varnish. Sticky, gummy varnish that clogs up piston rings and prevents them from expanding and contracting. That's bad. Bad for power and pep. Bad for oil consumption. Bad for gasoline mileage. So to protect your motor from such damage, Signal Oil Company has a special type motor oil, specially engineered not only to keep from forming varnish, but also to wash out accumulated varnish that other motor oils may already have left in your motor. Result? When new engines are protected with Signal Premium compounded motor oil, they stay new. And when older cars switch to this extra duty Signal oil that does so much more than just lubricate, you notice improved pep, power, and gasoline mileage. So, whatever you're driving, you'll be giving your car a new lease on life by making your next oil change a change to Signal Premium compounded motor oil at a Signal service station.
Well, Christine, after 8 years, you were sure no one would ever discover your real name is Maxine Wood, that you once participated in a robbery that ended in murder by your accomplice. It was something you hadn't counted on when you recklessly agreed to help on the job, but it happened. And now, the girl who saw you threatens to inform the police of your true identity, tear down the long years of struggle that has made you a leading musical comedy star, unless you make her your understudy. The following morning, you telephone Ned Wilson, arrange an audition for Doris Richley that same afternoon. And after lunch, you pace your apartment floor nervously as you await Ned's call. Finally, you calm down and decide your fears are groundless, that it would be impossible for anyone with so little experience to audition successfully before the critical Ned Wilson. And then the telephone rings.
Oh, hello, darling.
Say, you really uncovered some talent. Doris is great. She's really great.
What did you say?
I said Doris Richley is great, natural, real fine. Oh, wait till the critics get a load of her. She's
Ned, it isn't necessary to shout.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. I guess I'm a little excited about her being so terrific. I was afraid she'd turn out to be another Martin Duncan. You know, his play wasn't any good at all.
I was afraid it wouldn't be.
Doris is another story. She seems to learn quickly, and she ought to have your part down pat in no time. Matter of fact, if you're not careful, she might dance right into your job. I may make you a talent scout instead.
That's one of my strong points, spotting talent.
Chris, Doris is right here. She wants to talk to you here.
I just want to thank you, Miss Courtney. I'm so pleased about everything. Mr. Wilson seems to think I have excellent possibilities.
Yes. Yes, so he said.
I told you I could make it if you just give me a chance.
Yes, you did, didn't you?
Anyway, thanks again. I think you know how much it means to me. And, Miss Courtney, I'll never forget you.
You know what she means, don't you, Christine? She'll never forget who you really are in case you should get out of line. You're shocked at the success of her audition. And yet you're relieved, too, because this should silence her. Keep her from going to the police about you. And a lot of things can happen before Doris actually steps in and takes over your part. Everything goes smoothly for the next few days. And then one afternoon, you enter your dressing room to find Martin Duncan waiting for you.
Well, Martin, hello.
Hello, Miss Courtney.
Oh, it's nice to see you. I've been meaning to call you and tell you how sorry I am Ned wasn't interested in your play.
That's very nice of you, Miss Courtney, but you see, it doesn't make any difference. I found a buyer for it.
Oh, Martin, that's wonderful. Oh, I'm so glad for you. Who?
You.
Me? Oh, now, wait a minute,
You're
Martin.
You're certainly doing a lot for unknown talent these days, Miss Courtney. First, Doris Richley, now me.
Doris? You and Doris?
Yes, Miss Courtney. Redwood, Missouri isn't so far from Broadway, is it, Miss Courtney? Doris and I discovered then. We found we had a lot to talk about.
Of all the cheap, conniving tricks, how much of a fool do you two think I am?
Well, you were foolish enough to make a pretty big mistake 8 years ago back in Missouri. But we don't think you're foolish enough to let me go to the police with it.
Suppose you went to the police. Where would that get you?
The question is, where would it get you?
You know, Martin, you're the type that's liable to wake up dead some morning.
I don't think so. I keep a revolver in my desk at home that says I'm going to live a long, happy life.
You must have annoyed quite a few people.
Possibly. Anyway, the price for my play is only $30,000.
Oh, you know I don't have that kind of money.
Big star like you, don't make me laugh.
I'm not trying to. I've only been on top for one season. My expenses are big. So are my taxes. Agents' fees, publicity costs.
You're going to have to go on a budget, aren't you, Miss Courtney? Tell you what. Give you a couple of days to think it over. Then you can pay me, say, $5,000 down and, $300 a week.
Well, Christine, your past is catching up with you. First Doris, now Martin Duncan. And you're sure it's just the beginning of a very long payoff. The next day, you try to find some way to meet Martin's demands, but you don't have the money, and you won't ask Ned for it. You can't. The tension and worry within you mounts. All day, you've been nervous and irritable. And late that afternoon, you receive a telephone call from Ned, which upsets you still further.
Hello.
Hello, darling. Look, I know it's a little late to call it off, but I'm afraid I'll have to break our lunch date for tomorrow. I have an appointment I forgot about.
An appointment named Doris Richley, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah, it is. See, I promised I'd run over some lines with her. She's not so sure of it.
Oh, how very, very thoughtful.
Oh, now, Chris, don't be that way. You know she doesn't mean anything to me. It's just that, well, we open in a week and never know when she might have to step in.
I don't even need an understudy. I have never missed a performance in my life.
Chris, look, you've been working pretty hard lately. You seem tired and nervous, and I think you need a rest. Well, the cast has noticed this, too. In fact, even Doris mentioned that you haven't seen your usual self.
Oh, she has she? Look, I can take care of myself, and I don't need a rest. I've never felt better in my life.
Now, Chris...
If you want me out of the show, say so. But don't give me this other routine.
Oh, Chris, for heaven's sake. Now, listen, I just...
You might have known that stealing Ned away from you was part of Doris's plan, too, Christine. Suddenly, even in your anger, it all becomes quite clear. You felt only the first stinging blows, the first pebbles of the avalanche. You know now that Doris won't stop until she's pushed you entirely aside. She or Martin could turn you over to the police any time. You toss and turn most of the night. Toward morning, you realize you must take steps. Desperate steps, if necessary, to eliminate this threat to your present and future security. Suddenly, you see a way out. A dangerous way. But if you're successful, a sure way. You carefully work out your plans. And then after breakfast, you pick up the phone and dial Martin's number.
Hello?
Martin, this is Christine Courtney.
Good. I thought I might hear from you today.
I've decided to buy your play.
I thought you would. When can we talk about it?
Well, I'd hoped tonight. Didn't you say you lived at the Carlton apartment?
That's right. Right now, I'm the only person who can make that statement. They're redecorating the other units. Mine's the only one that's finished.
Well, I've got to stop by my dressmaker's. She's over near you anyway. How about 9 for our appointment?
Fine with me. I'm in 308. You can't miss it. It'll be the only one that sounds inhabited.
Good. I'll be there about 9. Martin, would you call Doris for me and ask her to be there, too? I have an idea I think she'll be interested in.
Sure. I'll phone her right away.
Thanks, Martin. Goodbye.
That's the way you want it, isn't it, Christine? Martin and Doris together tonight. And you're certain things will work out perfectly for you. That evening, before you leave for Martin's, you take 3 of your own sleeping pills from the bottle your doctor prescribed for you and put them in your purse. From your dressing table, you select a pair of white cotton gloves. It's 7 o'clock when you reach the Carlton and press the buzzer outside 308. You're 2 hours early, just as you planned.
Well, hello. Don't tell me my clock stopped.
I'm afraid I'm quite early, Martin. The dressmaker couldn't take me after all. And, well, I was so near, I decided just to come on, early or not.
Glad you did. Take your hat, gloves?
Oh, no, thanks. I'll just keep them on, then I'll know where they are. Is Doris coming?
Mm-hmm. She'll be here around 9. How about a drink?
Oh, wonderful idea. I'd love one.
When Martin comes back with the drinks, you discuss his play, its chances for success, and wait patiently for the opportunity to drop the sleeping tablets into his glass. You ask for more ice, and while he's in the kitchen, you watch the tablets bubble up and then quickly dissolve in his drink. Not long after he finishes it, his eyes grow hazy and close. His head falls forward on his chest. From your own experience, you're sure he'll sleep soundly for at least 2 hours or maybe three. And that's all the time you need, isn't it, Christine? Still wearing your white cotton gloves, you take your two glasses to the kitchen, wash them both thoroughly, and pour the least bit of a fresh drink into Martin's glass. Back in the living room, you press his hand around it for fingerprints and put it on the table before him. Then you walk quickly over to his desk, open the center drawer, and there it is. Just as Martin said it would be, the final link necessary to your plan, his revolver. You make certain it's loaded and put it in your jacket pocket and settle back to wait for Doris. A little after 9.
Come in, Doris.
I'm afraid I'm a little late. Well, what's the matter with Martin?
Looks like he passed out.
Passed out? Well, there's a switch. He's never done that before.
He's never had this kind of a drink before.
What kind of a crack is that?
His drink was loaded, Doris. So is this.
Hey, now, wait a minute. What's the idea?
That's something you'll never know, Doris.
It was simple, wasn't it, Christine? Doris Richley is dead. That leaves only Martin slumped head forward on the divan. You move quickly now. Drag Doris over near Martin. And then, still wearing your gloves, you place the gun in his hand. Put his index finger on the trigger. Raise the gun to his temple and fire. Now it's over. Martin is dead beside Doris, and your secret dies with him. You remove your gloves, survey the room quickly, and then you go to the front.
Police headquarters.
Oh, please. Send someone to the Carlton Apartments, number 308. There's been a murder and a suicide. Oh, please, hurry.
Your hysteria is almost real by the time you hang up the phone. But you're sure that with the evidence you've carefully planted, your story will stand up. And you're grateful in the knowledge that Martin's apartment building is empty of its occupants. No one will be barging in asking questions until the police come. And when the lieutenant arrives, you feign a stoic calm as you tell your story.
I tried to stop him, Lieutenant. I never dreamed he'd do such a thing.
Suppose you begin at the beginning, Miss Courtney. What were you doing here?
Well, Martin asked me to stop by. He'd written a play, wanted me to read it. Mm-hmm. When I got here, his apartment door was slightly ajar. Doris was here. They were quarreling violently. He was accusing her of things, oh, all sorts of things.
Would you call it a lover's quarrel?
Yes, yes, I would. I started to leave, but then I realized that in his state of mind, he might have done something. Oh, he was insanely jealous of her. So I came in to see if I could help.
Did he have the gun then?
Yes. Yes, he was sitting on the divan with a revolver in his hand. I tried to talk to him, calm him down. At first, I thought he was going to be okay. Then Doris said she was through with him, and he seemed to go crazy. Before I could stop him, he shot her. Then he calmly sat down on the divan and turned the gun on himself.
I see.
Oh, if only I had the sense to go for help immediately.
You mustn't blame yourself, Miss Courtney.
But they were both my friends.
I know. Things like this are always tough, even on us. You get some rest now. I'll have one of my men drive you home.
Oh, thank you.
Try to forget about tonight. I'm sure the fingerprints on the gun and powder burns on Duncan's hand will bear out your story.
You've been very kind, Lieutenant. I appreciate it more than you know.
To make your vacation budget buy as much fun as possible, you'd naturally like to be sure you're powering your car with the gasoline that gives maximum mileage, maximum performance. Well, when it comes to mileage, that's what Signal, the Go Farther gasoline, is most famous for. But when you understand what gives Signal gasoline such good mileage, you also know why Signal assures you peak performance, too. You see, today's Signal gasoline is engineered to help your motor run more efficiently. And when your motor runs more efficiently, naturally you enjoy quick starting, proud pickup, and smooth, quiet power, in addition to mileage. So whether you're going on an extended tour of our glorious West or just a jaunt to the store or office, remember, you get a full measure of all the things that make driving more pleasure when you fill up with Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline.
Well, Christine, it's all over, isn't it? Then you're certain the police believe Martin Duncan killed Doris Richley, then turned the gun on himself and committed suicide. The police lieutenant's statement that the fingerprints on Martin's gun, the powder burns on his hand, will prove your story. Convinced you've left no loophole in your carefully planned removal of the only two people in the world who could identify you as Maxine Wood, wanted on an 8-year-old murder and robbery charge. The day following the tragedy, you insist on returning to work so you can forget. And once again, the rehearsal of Ned Wilson's new Broadway musical is in progress. Out front, the directors, writers, and backers of the production watch intently as you execute each intricate step with a rhythmic ease which made you famous.
Okay, take a break, everybody. 5 minutes, we'll be right back.
As you start off stage, the first person you see in the wings is the lieutenant who'd question you at Martin Duncan's apartment. You try to appear unconcerned as you walk toward him.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello, Miss Courtney.
You want to see me?
I'm afraid I do.
Afraid? What do you mean?
I thought maybe you might want to alter the story you told me last night.
Why would I wish to do that?
There were just three of you at Martin Duncan's apartment.
That's right.
And you still say you saw Duncan shoot Miss Richley, then turn the gun on himself?
Well, of course I do. That's exactly what happened. Why, you said yourself his fingerprints on the gun, the powder burns on his hand prove that.
His prints on the gun check okay, Miss Courtney. The powder burns are in his hand, too.
Well, then why are you...
These your sleeping pills, Miss Courtney?
Well, I don't know.
They're from your medicine cabinet, and your name's on them.
Yeah, then they must be mine.
Your doctor says they contain ecstasy.
Well, suppose they do.
Funny thing about some drugs, ecstasy, for example. Some people, most people even, can take it. Doesn't bother them. But a few cannot. Martin Duncan was one of these. He was allergic to ecstasy, Miss Courtney.
Well, suppose he was. He shot Doris, I tell you, and then he
turned... Yes, he did. He was the first dead man in history to commit murder and suicide.
Dead man?
That's right. Duncan strangled to death a few minutes after you gave him the sleeping pills. He couldn't have shot either himself or Doris Richley. The autopsy proves he was dead for more than an hour before either of them was shot. You were the only other person there, Miss Courtney.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Each Sunday night at this same time, brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. To make your travels even more pleasant, Signal dealers are now offering free a 20-page guide to selected eating and lodging places in 350 cities and towns through 16 western states. One of these handy booklets is yours for the asking at any Signal service station. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman, Joe Gilbert, Doris Singleton, John Daner, and Dave Ellis. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Nancy Cleveland, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblances to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Ladies and gentlemen, the Signal Oil Company invites you to stay tuned to this station, for in half an hour, at 8:30, you'll hear the spectacular presentation, The Miracle of America. Featuring 20 top radio stars and 6 name orchestras, The Miracle of America is a full-hour show, beginning at 8:30 this evening on the station to which you are listening. Remember at this same time next Sunday, another strange tale by the Whistler. Norman Nesbitt speaking for the Signal Oil Company while Marvin Miller is on vacation. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There's more from Theater 5, The Whistler, The Relic Radio Show, and everything else Relic Radio at the website, relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is up there with even more old-time radio. Lots to listen to, all for free, thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Thank you again to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. Be back tomorrow with Case Closed and next Tuesday with another episode of The Relic Radio Show.